This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
50 days to go until the Olympics kick off in Tokyo, and the organizing committee insists the games will go ahead. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. It's already been postponed for a year, but there's been a lot of discussion in recent weeks about whether the Olympics can or even should go ahead as the world continues to battle the COVID-19 pandemic. There's strong opposition to the event in Japan, and the government this week extended a state of emergency for the virus in Tokyo. While it's ultimately up to the International Olympic Committee to postpone the games, the president of Tokyo 2020, Seiko Hashimoto, told the BBC today she's 100% certain the games will go ahead next month.
For the athletes and the stakeholders, they will be inside a bubble, and this is how we envisage protecting and defending their health. If an outbreak should happen during the games that amounts to a crisis or an emergency situation, then I believe we must be prepared to have these games without any spectators.
So what does the uncertainty mean for the world's third largest economy, which had been relying on an Olympic boost? Nohiko Baba, Goldman Sachs chief Japan economist in Tokyo, expects any gains to be modest.
With respect to domestic consumption boost, it usually includes the purchases of a new TV sets and Olympic-related merchandise. We think particularly the replacement demand for TVs have been largely exhausted by such factors, so as the stay-at-home demand during 2020.
The economy shrank more than expected in the first quarter, and domestic consumer demand dropped. That doesn't really seem like a recipe for an economic rebound from the pandemic anytime soon, does it? What is your outlook longer term for the Japanese economy?
We expect 0.2%, damage to GDP, actually. So if the Olympics games are canceled, so if the vaccine rollout makes enough progress, Japanese economy started to reopen. So we expect a big rebound in the service consumption in particular. So domestic demand matters.
Nohiko Baba from Goldman Sachs, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, the Nikkei in Tokyo closed up 0.3% today alongside a slight rise in Asia's shares. China's Commerce Ministry today, meanwhile, said normal communications with the U.S. have resumed over trade. It said both sides would work together to address issues for producers and consumers. Checking some other numbers here in Europe, key benchmarks in Paris, Frankfurt and Milan are little changed, while London's FTSE 100 is off 0.5%, weighed down by disappointing earnings results. An update for you on the global COVID-19 vaccine effort, UNICEF today is urging the world's richest countries to donate a fifth of their vaccines to 18 African nations that are running out of supplies. The BBC's Tulip Mazumdar has that story.
The shortfall is primarily down to the crisis in India, which has resulted in doses from the main supplier, the Serum Institute, being diverted for use domestically. UNICEF wants G7 countries, together with the EU, to donate 20% of their vaccine doses in June, July and August to help plug the gap. This week, many rich nations promised another $2.4 billion to help get vaccines into poorer countries. But with manufacturers unable to keep up with demand and a few wealthy countries hoarding so many of the currently available doses, it's the world's poorest who remain last in line to be vaccinated.
Tulip Mazumdar there. One of the most recognizable garments in fashion history goes on display today.
And out come the bride and groom.
That's the 1981 wedding of Prince Charles to Princess Diana, and for the first time in 25 years, her wedding gown is now on display at Kensington Palace. It's part of a new exhibition called Royal Style in the Making, which highlights the relationship between fashion designers and their royal clients. Matthew Story is the exhibit's curator.
We've been discussing displaying Diana, Princess of Wales's wedding dress at Kensington Palace since 2017, so it's amazing to finally be able to show it for the first time in her former home. The exhibition showcases five British designers and how they worked with three generations of royal women.
So what has taken so long to get that dress on display?
Well, it's a very large dress, indeed.
Indeed, a 25-foot long train, I think, if that's right.
Exactly, a 25-foot long train, a huge petticoat to create that extraordinary silhouette, which the whole world saw. 750 million people tuned in to watch the wedding in 1981. And what works for us, we've just restored our beautiful orangery at Kensington Palace. So it was the perfect venue to display Diana, Princess of Wales's wedding dress.
With such a headliner, what do you expect tourism to be like this summer? I just checked and there's a very long wait just to book tickets.
After the year we've all had, I really hope people will want to come back to cultural attractions. We think domestic tourism is going to be very, very important this summer. There's probably never been a better summer to be a UK tourist in the UK. But depending on what happens with the international situation, we are looking forward to welcoming back foreign tourists when that's possible.
As you say, domestic UK tourism is going to be key this summer. Tourists here in the country spent an estimated $5 billion less in the city because of the pandemic. So how are you dealing with the effects of the pandemic? Will this exhibit sort of kickstart the summer season for you?
It's very important to us. The historic Royal Palaces was very, very badly affected by the pandemic. We are an independent charity and rely on our visitors to generate income. So we are really hoping that providing and wonderful exhibitions like this will give people a great reason to come and visit us. And we can't wait to welcome people back for our doors.
Matthew Story, curator at Historic Royal Palaces. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, that exhibit is on until January 2nd, and demand is indeed pretty high. At last check, more than 3,100 people were in the virtual ticketing line. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.